Brothers, welcome back to a very special episode of The Gentleman's Journey. Once again, we are live from Dallas, Texas. Special shout out and thank you to Brother David Seaton for hosting us. I'm here with a very, very special guest today, Brother Chet Roan from Alpha Iota class of 1945. Chet, thank you so much for being here with us today. How are you?
Thank you. I'm fine, man.
First and foremost, just from everyone at Central Office and all of our Kaisai brothers everywhere, thank you so much for your service. We appreciate you and we appreciate what you did for this country and for us. And it's not easily forgotten. I hope you know that. So thank you so much. Just starting off, Chet, I mean, what was childhood like for you? What were those experiences like? What was it like growing up in Milwaukee?
Well, I guess it was like growing up anywhere. I had a very good childhood. I lived in a suburb of Milwaukee, Whitefish Bay. Had a lot of friends up there, some of whom came to school with me. And I went to a private high school that was dates back to 1851. A German guy came over and started the high school because he said the Americans didn't pay enough attention to exercise. The Germans had these, you know, these horses. You ever seen those things in the gym?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, he brought all that over, and he said exercise and that type of thing is part of education. So he started this school in 1851, and it's still going. It's called Milwaukee University School now. So it went way back. I had great aunts going to the same high school I went to, if you could imagine.
So a lot of generational involvement in these things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a story. That's kind of like, you know, it's like almost tradition. Everyone kind of goes to the same place. But no, that is really cool, though. And then what were some things you really enjoyed doing, though? Like some activities? Like what? Like for some people, it's sports. For some people, it's writing. Like what were things that you, Chet, like to do?
Tennis.
Tennis? Really?
Yeah.
Were you any good?
I was passable. I played Bobby. Do you know ever Bobby Riggs?
Yes.
Okay. He came to my tennis club, and I played with him and against him one time, which was a lot of fun. I ran a group for probably 20 years, maybe more. That my high school let me use the courts. I had the key to the courts. We had 8 courts every Sunday. And I had on my list about 120 people. But you needed that because, you know, you couldn't necessarily get all the people together, I mean, enough people together to play every Sunday. But we did. Mm-hmm. And they had so much fun, they sent me and my daughter to Club Med in Mexico, if you can imagine.
No, I absolutely can. Yeah. But I got to know, though, this is super important. Did you prefer singles or doubles? Did you like playing with someone or did you like playing by yourself?
I played some singles, but mainly doubles.
Mainly doubles?
This was conversational tennis. I mean, we weren't all great at it. And I had a lot of girls that didn't know which end of the racket to hold, but I'd give them a real good partner play, you know. And it was the girls would cook up food, bring the food to the court. We'd have parties together. It was just fun. That was my big thing during growing up and
sure. Everything.
I played, I don't know how many team games of tennis, but I played probably 100 games a week for a long time.
100 games a week?
Well, I played at night. See, you could play at night, so I could work and I could play tennis at night at my club, which I did 2 or 3 nights a week, and then on weekends I had outdoor courts. If the weather was right, if it wasn't, I'd bring them into my club, that type of thing.
Oh, I'm sure it was a great way to stay active, get everyone together. I mean, it sounds like it was really fun for you.
And it was really a good organization. We had nice people from all walks of life. anybody that wanted to play tennis, I don't care. They said, I said, join the group.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Even though it was conversational, it was still really enjoyable for everyone from what you make it sound like. That's really good. So, moving forward a little bit, you were born in 24, correct?
1924.
You were born in 1924?
Yes.
So moving up about 19 or so years, what brought you to Wisconsin in particular? Obviously, growing up in Milwaukee, did you always want to go to Wisconsin, or did you have any other schools in mind?
Well, all my family and cousins and uncles and aunts and my mother and my dad all went to Wisconsin. So they were all in fraternities or sororities, and so I knew a lot of people that were going to school there.
Yeah, of course. So I guess just Badger fans, right?
Yep.
Absolutely. And you said your parents were very involved in sororities. I think you mentioned to me earlier your mom was an A Phi, right?
My mom won.
Your mom was an Alpha Phi at
Alpha Phi,
Wisconsin, and your dad was a Kappa Sig.
Kappa Sig, yeah.
Very cool, okay. Mm. So you kind of had a nice idea of what Greek life was like before you found Kaiser.
Sure. I used to go to football games when I was in grade school. My dad would take me out to the first Badger game.
Absolutely.
So I knew where I was going to school when I was in kindergarten. I knew I was going to go to Wisconsin.
It was kind of like the hometown dream. I mean, it makes sense that way. I totally get it.
I had a lot of relatives that went there, and it's the big school in Wisconsin. We have a lot of little colleges, but Wisconsin is a big university, so I enjoyed it.
So you answered why you wanted to rush a fraternity. Obviously, your parents had involvement with it. It's something that you would have enjoyed. But what brought you specifically to Chi Psi? As we talked about earlier, you could have gone to Kappa Sig. That's what your dad was.
Chi Psi ran some summer picnics for prospective Chi Psis. Mm-hmm. And I was invited to one of those. I liked the people. And so when fall came, I went through Rush, of course, And that was one of the first places I went. And I just enjoyed the people because I knew a number of them there already. So no big problem. I wasn't going to be a Kappa Sig. I know that.
By the end of it was probably an easy choice, wasn't it?
Yeah, sure.
What? So after mentioning how you found Chi Psi, what is a particularly fond memory you have of the Brotherhood? Does anything stick out to you from your days in the lodge or anything else?
I knew all the families. Milwaukee is kind of like a big small town. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people that were in the lodge, I knew their parents. I knew their brothers and sisters and so on. So it was kind of like a family thing. And I just thought Chi Psi was the place for me, and it was.
I think oftentimes people are reluctant to get involved with Greek life. You know, even especially today, Greek life has a really bad look.
In some cases, yeah.
And you know, when one Greek organization acts in a poor way, it kind of reflects badly on all of our Greek life.
Yeah.
In your opinion, would you say Chi Psi is really set apart from those things, or we try to live set apart from those?
I think so. I had that feeling, yeah.
I think so, too. So regarding your time in the lodge, what were some things y'all, like, actually did in there? I know we've talked about what a castle it was and, you know, the fact that you guys would have to go to your benefactor to fix things up. What were some activities that you enjoyed doing in the lodge?
Well, I held most of the positions, including number one and number two, and I think number five. I don't know all the numbers anymore. But sports, we did a lot of sports, and I liked that. I just liked the fellas, and I knew a lot of these people before I even played Chi Psi. Not a lot, but I knew certain ones that were good friends of mine, either in high school or someplace. And so I just had a very enjoyable college life. I was very short because of the Army and everything else. And, I mean, I started in 41. I didn't get out till 49 because of the war. But I even enjoyed part of the war. I was in Patton's Third Army.
Yes, of course, and that was actually what I was transitioning to. My next question for you was going to be, right before we got to that, do you remember vividly, or to some degree, the day that you were drafted? Do you remember like what that was like for you?
Well, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I knew when I was going to be drafted because my dad knew the head of the draft board. He said, well, this will be the day, and we'll let him finish this semester in school or whatever it was. And so, it was no big deal, mm-hmm. You know.
What were your initial feelings towards it? Were you ever planning on enlisting if you didn't get drafted, or was it just going to be one of those things?
No, I wanted to pursue my education. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, everybody else was going. I didn't know any guys, if they were physically able, that weren't in the service. Army, Navy, Air Force, mm-hmm. Japan, wherever they... Everybody I knew was in the service, it was no big deal. It was just part of what you did in those days.
So, you know, the day it happens, you really didn't have that... I don't want to say like large emotions, but you didn't feel bitter about it because it was something that everyone was doing.
Everything. All my friends were doing it, sure. I didn't want to be left out. And a lot of parts of it I didn't like, but I didn't mind the service. I got to see Europe all over the place.
Sure.
Not only during the war, but after the war, as they didn't have enough ships to take us back. So I went, the Army ran a trip to Switzerland for a week. I did that type of thing. Paris, I don't know how many times I went to Paris, mm-hmm. London. And I was always interested in history, so I saw things that I knew about. So I enjoyed my Army life to some extent.
And I think you and I would both say you thought it was a high honor. Also,
it was what?
A high honor for you. Like, it was a very honorable thing that you were able to do.
It was just the thing you did. Everybody did. You know, it wasn't anything special. I didn't know anybody who wasn't in the service. Even some of my girl cousins went into the service. So, it was just a part of life at that time. I knew a couple guys that didn't go because they were physically unable to, but otherwise every person I knew was in the service somewhere.
Because it was just something people were doing.
Yeah, it was a part of life then.
Okay, so you did fight in Patton's Army in the Battle of the Bulge, and you were a machine gunner. And so your role exactly was to do what during the battle? You were to just follow the front line and actually like have...
Well, see, I was in a half track. I was the rear machine gunner on a half track. Mm-hmm. So we didn't do a lot of walking during the war, but we did a lot of riding. And the war was quite an eye-opener for us all. None of us had ever had, my squad never had been in anything like that. But you got used to it. And I wanted to be there. I didn't want to be elsewhere because all my friends were in the service. I would have felt left out if I wasn't in the service.
So, and then if I remember correctly, you guys would take out teller mines at night, right? You would follow the Germans as they put them in, and then you would go take them out?
We'd follow the German truck. So we could hear putt-putting about two or three blocks ahead of us, and we knew what they were doing. They were laying the mines. You couldn't dig them in. I mean, the frost line was 5 feet deep, but it was snowing all the time.
Right.
So they just let the snow cover up the teller mines, and we had to go and feel for those darn things and silently just drag them off the road. It was a road our combat command was going to use the next day, and we had to clear all those mines out so that our combat command could go with all the vehicles, you know.
Of course. Was it challenging adapting to that kind of life based on what you were doing before, just being a boy in school? Was it really hard for you?
Well, it was different. Yeah, I can't say all of it was pleasurable, but I didn't want to be elsewhere because everybody I knew was in service.
Though it was something all of your friends and just people you knew were doing it, I think you can definitely say there were some days that were particularly difficult. And I was hoping you could tell me about the day that you you and your squad liberated that Nazi concentration camp in Linz, Austria. I know that was a particularly difficult day for you, and I'd love to hear about that.
Well, we were getting pretty used to it by that time. That was toward the end of the war. That was Mauthausen.
Mm-hmm.
Mauthausen was in, not like some of the death camps, it was in a great big, federal prison. And it had been a prison for ordinary Germans back in the 30s. And so it was, but it was a horrible sight in there, Lord. You got used to all this stuff, seeing dead mm-hmm. people all over the place, but not like that. In Mauthausen, you had to step over bodies to get from one room to another. And it wasn't something I wanted to see any more of, but all with striped uniforms on, you know.
Children, also, like not just adults, but children also, I'm sure that was tough to see. Were there children also that you saw when you liberated the camp, or was it an adult camp?
I'm sorry,
that's okay. I didn't ask it nearly loud.
I get this.
No, I was saying, was it specifically an adult concentration camp, or were there kids also?
I didn't see any children.
Any children?
There might have been some in there, but most of the time it was adults.
I'm sure it didn't make the sight any easier.
It was stuff, you know, I had never seen in my life anything like that. Just dead people everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The Nazis were the cruelest people in the world, and I'm a German, but
not that kind of German.
Not that kind. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now you said that was towards the end of the war. Obviously, when everything was getting liberated, like more towards the Nazi surrender in 45.
Yeah.
And so you had. You still had many things, you amongst many other people, that you had to consider when you were coming home. And the idea of returning was a little interesting to some, because you spend 4 years in the war away, overseas in Europe, as we talked about. Well, what was it like returning home for you to the States?
Well, the return voyage was the worst experience I think I've ever had. We were on a brand new aircraft carrier that they sent from the Pacific just to haul people home. Remember, I don't know how many million, 20, 30 million people in Europe had to be relocated. So I had to wait about 9 months after the war was over before it was my turn to go home. It just took that much time to get all these people. So the first day I thought, you know, boy, I heard they can play baseball on the flight deck. This is gonna be fun. Well, we hit three hurricanes that I didn't think I was going to ever get home. It was so bad when I got off in New York, the flight deck was collapsed on the bow, about 40 feet of the flight deck, which, you know, would be above the prow, was collapsed right on the bow, the boat. Water came that high. Now, you can imagine those waves had to come at least 40, 50 feet up to get over the flight deck. I was scared. And rivets were popping. We could look through the rivet holes and see these mounds of water go up and go down.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rough ride. And luckily, it was a brand new aircraft carrier. I guess the captain knew what he was doing, but we were all scared. That was That was the worst trip I ever had. It took us 12 days to sail across the Atlantic.
Wow.
We hit three of those terrible storms, one after another. And I'd never been in a hurricane before on the water. I don't ever want to be on it again.
I reckon not. But
it's just scary.
I can't imagine what it's like actually being on the water. Yeah. Now, when you dock in New York and you eventually get home, back to Wisconsin, was it tough to kind of just get back into normal things, like even just sleeping in a bed?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to, at home, I'd get out of my bed, sleep on the floor for a while, which sounds crazy, but I did.
It's not, but...
By this time, now the war is over by close to a year, you know, that I'm home. And I didn't want to go right back to school. I worked for a while, and got out of the Army, I think, on about January 2nd of 40, what would it be, 45. And I could have gone back right away, but I wasn't ready for school right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I waited until the fall semester to get back on the regular system. So I worked a couple of jobs that way and made hormones at a company, mm-hmm. if you can imagine. But I got back into the swing of it, and then by the end of that year, the next year, the guys were coming home. I mean, every week somebody that I knew three, four years ago were coming back, you know, going back to school. And it was a lot of fun. Some guys were 30 years old, they're coming back to school, they hadn't been able to finish during, you know, the war years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took right off. It was a big party at school for a long while. But I have no regrets about the war. I got through it, so did 20, 30 million other guys.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, it was what everyone was doing at the time. And
yeah.
While
I mean, everybody wanted to be in some part of the service. You would have been left out if you didn't. And there were lots of parts I didn't like, you know, some of the freezing or other, sleeping on top of the snow and the ice and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was no fun, but it got better, and at least I didn't have to walk all the way across Europe. I was in an armored division, so... I had an armored half-track that I was on. So wherever we went, we drove. But we had a few exciting experiences during the war, too. So, but everybody did.
Yeah.
It wasn't unusual, you know.
It was one of those things, like, it impacted the whole world, like,
oh, sure.
the war. So
yeah.
You'd think that, again, when it was finally time for America to join in, after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, just the amount of unified effort from everyone, that wouldn't surprise someone like yourself or your friends at that time, because that was the norm. That's what people wanted to do.
Everybody was in it. I didn't want to be left out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no choice, of course, but I didn't feel bad about being in the war, because all my friends were in the war, and even one girl cousin of mine was in the Red Cross and ended up in the South Pacific, and it was an all-encompassing type of activity, so I have no regrets about the war. It was an interesting experience. I would never want to do it again, but it was interesting.
Absolutely. Now, transitioning back into some school and Kai Psi-oriented questions following your time in the war. So, I would love to hear one of your favorite Kai Psi stories. I hear you have a good one about a day where class was canceled because of snow.
Where do you hear all these things?
It may or may not be your daughter, but she let me know that you have a couple particularly good stories.
It was the only time the university ever closed.
The only time?
The whole university had to close. It was a 20-inch snow. Nobody could drive. I mean, the snow was like this in the street.
No way. That high?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was tough walking. But Langdon Street was kind of the business section in that area. So we said, okay, party, you know. So a couple guys and I walked through this, plowed through the snow, went down, got a quarter barrel of beer, rolled that darn thing all the way 3 or 4 blocks through the snow, and we had a good party.
So you borrowed the ladder?
Pardon?
You borrowed this ladder that you used.
Where'd you hear about that? Yeah.
Same place.
Well, there was some construction, and one of my guys said, I'm going to get that ladder, because we wanted to get a couple of the girls from the Kappa house out. And they were up on the third floor, and we could not have gotten there without an extension ladder. And this was at night, and we had to be real careful. But we phoned them and said, we're coming. So we got this extension ladder up there, and they came down the ladder real quietly from their room. And we had a small beer party. Got back to the lodge.
So you borrow this ladder from the construction site.
Yeah.
To break out the Kappas out of a multi-story, was it like a sorority house or was it like a dorm?
No, they were in it was the Kappa house.
It was, yeah, the Kappa house.
Oh, yeah. But they had a tall, but the girls were up on the second or third floor, this guy I was with, he was a character, he said, come on, we can do this. And we did. We put the extension ladder, and they came down, and we had a nice party for a day or two there.
did the ladder get back to where it was supposed to go?
Yeah, finally. It went back
eventually
to the construction site. You know.
They never knew it was gone.
But everything had stopped. You know, there was no traffic. You could not drive. It was the heaviest snow they ever had, and it was the only time the University of Wisconsin shut down, that one day.
Just that one day.
The whole university just, you couldn't move. We could plow through the snow to get the beer, but we couldn't plow through the snow to get the classes, you know.
Well, that sounds like a killer story.
That was fun.
It does sound like fun times. And again, it doesn't seem any different than things that go on now.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool to know that. Again, when we're talking 1940s here, people are doing the same stuff as guys are doing right now. Now, would I be able to take a ladder myself and go break out some girls out of the cap house? I don't know. I don't know if I could get away with that now. But on a snow...
Well, it's the only way we could get them out without the house mother. You know, they all...
House mothers are scary. Very scary.
Yeah, we didn't have house mothers for fraternities, but every sorority had a house mother. So we had to do this very quietly, but they came down. I don't know, I would have been scared going on that ladder from that floor, but down they came. So we had a party, an all-day party.
Best snow day ever, right?
It's the only time that we ever were just completely landlocked, you might say. You couldn't do anything. I mean, the snow was up to your knees.
Wow.
And it was just to walk through that was something. And of course, the plows hadn't been out, and there was absolutely no traffic. But luckily, this beer joint was open that had the barrels, and so we got the quarter barrel of beer up there.
Mm-hmm. You and I mentioned earlier, just keeping it within the Kaiser realm, you and I mentioned earlier your love of Stephen Ambrose. This was off camera, but you and I talked about that for a moment.
Yeah.
And I know you mentioned that you loved his writings. For those of you who don't know, Stephen Ambrose was a Kaiser at UWashington. So I would just like love to hear the impact that his writings had on you personally.
Well, I was very interested. I like history to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a historian, too. And he became a professor down in New Orleans or I think that's where he ended up.
I believe it was New Orleans, yeah.
And he was the one that started the D-Day Museum.
Really?
He and a couple others. Oh, sure.
Wow.
Because of Ambrose. And the reason it was down there, all of the invasion craft were made in New Orleans. We could not have landed on the beaches of France without those craft. I mean, they would shallow draft, you could run them right up on the beach. And so the Army bought thousands of these from him. He originally was making flat-bottom fishing boats that would go into the bayous in shallow water. So these were shallow, very shallow water craft. They were just perfect for landing troops on shore. Ambrose got very involved in that. Have you ever read any of his books?
I've actually been intending to. I haven't read any yet, but I want to start. So maybe you can give me some insight.
They're great. I'm kind of a history buff, and I like Civil War books and things like that. And so I've read all of Ambrose's books, and he was a good author. And he was just a young kid. He was too young to be in the war. Mm. He was probably 8 years younger than I was. So he was just a young kid, and he just got interested because he talked to so many soldiers coming back.
Yeah.
And so he decided to make his life as a writer, and he wrote, he interviewed a lot of people, and he wrote a lot of books that are really good. And we lost a great guy when he died. I've got all his books, and I've reread and reread them. So
it's good to know that at least everything he wrote can like stay with us. You know, that's cool that we can still have that even in his absence, which is nice.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure that's something you really appreciate. Yeah.
He was a friend of a lot of soldiers. As a young kid, he made a lot of friends of soldiers returning. And he changed his major. He lived in southern Wisconsin, and he went to Madison to the school, and then he changed his major. He said, I want to be a historian. And it was the best thing he ever did because he wrote some great books. He did excellent work in getting facts and figures. His books were honest, and I still would recommend him any of the books he wrote. He knew what he was writing about, even though he was too young to be in the service or anything else. And I was sorry that we lost him.
Hmm.
But he grew up and became a Kaiser at Wisconsin, and way after I was there.
Yeah, I think, again, just the fact that he was able to touch a lot of people, was friends with a lot of people, I think it's definitely a nice thing that he was able to leave behind us, even in his death.
The major bookstores still carry his books.
And I'm sure they'll continue to for some time. I need to read some, so you've actually inspired me to do that.
They're just very interesting because he did his homework, even though he was never in the Army. He knew what he was writing about because he had done in-depth interviews with all the people that were involved in the war. And he made a name for himself. He was quite a national figure before he died.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, just finishing up here, you know, Chet, you've lived a lot of life. You've had a lot of experiences, not only just in Kaisai, but as we mentioned, in the war, after the war. Your life experience is pretty abundant. But we have a lot of young guys. We have a lot of young Kaisais out there.
Mm-hmm.
What's one thing you'd want them to know as someone who's been through a lot of life, including a life very filled with Kaisai and our values?
I don't know what I would want them to know, but I think they're going to learn it. I think that present generation is learning what happened to what they call the greatest generation way back there. I've got probably 200 books. I don't know where they all are. Half of them are in the attic by now, but I never throw a book away. I reread some of them. And Ambrose is one of the authors that I really respect because he knew what he was writing about, even though he wasn't in the service. He was a good interviewer, and he got a very nationally known name as a writer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at the very least we can all tell ourselves never throw a book away. You can always learn something new.
Yeah.
You can always you can always divulge new information. And I think that's pretty important. So even if they take up a little bit of space, like you said, you have some in your attic probably right now, they serve a purpose still.
Oh, sure.
Which is super important.
It does.
But anyway, Chet, we thank you so much for being with us today. We seriously appreciate you sitting down.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Talking to us about your life experience from one Kaisai to another. It is truly an honor to not only hear the perspective of a brother, but also, as you mentioned, the perspective of a soldier.
Now, where did you go to school?
I am a sophomore at Alpha Phi Delta. So, University.
And where?
Alpha Phi Delta. That's the University of Kentucky.
Kentucky?
Yes, sir. Kentucky.
Okay.
So, little far from our Madison friends, but I'm gonna make a visit up to that Iota Lodge very soon. That beautiful.
I spent a lot of time in Kentucky too. I was married to a Kentucky girl.
Oh, were you?
Oh yeah, from Richmond, Kentucky. You know where Richmond is?
Yes, I know where Richmond is. Okay. Absolutely. No, we love our old Kentucky home. Absolutely. Yeah. So, but seriously, I do need to take a visit up to the lodge. I gotta see it on the lake. I hear it's the most beautiful sight.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's the largest house, but it's built like a fort, and it took a lot of money to keep it up, but that thing has lasted through everything. And Madison has terribly cold weather. I mean, sub-zero is not unusual in winter in Madison.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
And this house has withstood it for, I think it was built in 1912, so that's over 100 years old. But it is it's just absolutely great for a fraternity house.
I believe it, and that's why it's stayed so strong all these years, even after you've left. So, again, thank you so much for being with us. I really do appreciate it. I hope you have a great rest of your week. Brothers,
thank you for your time,
too. Oh, absolutely. It's seriously my pleasure. I love getting to just hear all these stories. So, thank you guys for being with us. We will see you back next week with another episode. Have a blessed week.